All right, we have some other time certain items. LaVon is our guest here, and I might take them out of order if our students are willing, and if you don't really need 15 minutes, I don't think, to swear our new member in. So let's please take item 780 first, and then we'll go from there to 779.
Item 780, appoint Roberto Rivera to the Citizen Review Committee Advisory Board to the Independent Police Review, a division of the City Auditor's Office.
Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. LaVon Griffin Blade, City Auditor. I was here before, we were here before you about 2 months ago for the appointment of three new CRC members. That's the Citizen Review Committee, who were part of the pool of applicants from a very successful recruitment, thanks to our wonderful outreach director, coordinator, Irene Conniff. And I just wanted to acknowledge her very hard work. That particular pool was richly diverse, pool of 53 applicants. And in the past, we've had difficulty recruiting women to be part of the Citizen Review Committee, had 29 women on that pool. So due to a resignation from the committee, I'm today seeking appointment of another candidate from that very successful recruitment, Roberto Rivera. Roberto has been an Oregon resident for over 11 years. He is a graduate of Concordia University in Portland, where he earned his bachelor's degree in healthcare administration. He has 6 years of experience working in nonprofit organizations serving at-risk populations, including 211 Info, where he performed community outreach, gave presentations to the public, and assisted with resource database management. Roberto currently manages the in-home service department for Community Energy Project, which provides home repair services to low-income older adults and adults with disabilities. We're very honored that he was interested in being part of the Citizen Review Committee and very honored to have him on board. So,
great.
Turn it over to questions from you or
great. Well, welcome, Mr. Rivera. Pleased that you're willing to take on this community service. I don't know if you have anything in particular to add this morning, but we're happy to have you here.
Thank you. I just want to say thank you. This is a great opportunity to serve Portland, my community, and represent especially those vulnerable populations and making them aware of the process and helping them understand, as well as developing policies and trainings that can enable the police to better serve those vulnerable populations.
Thank you. Questions from the council? We have a resolution before us, and then do you actually swear him in here?
I'm going to do that elsewhere.
Okay. So we'll see if there's anyone else who wants to testify on the resolution. If not,
we have one person.
One person. We do have someone signed up. Okay, please.
Dan Handelman.
Dan, would you like to speak? Come on up.
Good morning again, Mayor and members of Council. I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch, and we're not here to support or oppose Mr. Rivera's appointment to the Citizen Review Committee necessarily. We just, as I know all you did, read through his resume and noticed certain things. I assuming that his job with 211 Info changed between the time the application happened and the time of now, because it was written in the present tense that he was working there then. But it is good to have somebody who's worked with the community. It's interesting, of course, we may note that he was once a public safety officer at the University of Portland. We're not holding that against him because we've had Michael Bigham, who just resigned from the committee, was a public safety officer for the Port of Portland, and he brought some insight to the committee that was very helpful over the years. So we'll looking forward to his service. And I didn't check our records, but I'm fairly sure that Mr. Rivera is going to be the first Latino appointed to the Citizen Review Committee since 2005, which is a long gap without representation from that community. So it is this is a good step forward. Unfortunately, he's just as Mr. Rivera is stepping in, Steve Yarosh, who made some very passionate speeches about police and racial profiling because of the two cases that have recently come before the Citizen Review Committee, has just stepped down. That's why Mr. Rivera is stepping up. And I think you all know, but I'll just say it again into the record, that last Wednesday, the Citizen Review Committee voted to find a police officer out of policy for treating an African-American man disrespectfully. And unfortunately, there was never an full investigation into what the officer was thinking, whether race played a part in it, because IPR separated out the racial profiling allegation from the others. The other case that's before the CRC, that allegation is actually being looked into now. So we look forward to that. And last week, this IPR brought forward a list of ideas that they want to put into the ordinance when changes are made because of the DOJ agreement. That list that they had, I'm not sure if it was meant to be a complete list, but it didn't include the expansion of the CRC to 11 members, which is actually part of the agreement. It didn't include CRC's ability to send cases back and insist that there be more investigation, where those cases I just talked about, the Bureau at first and the IPR refused to do more investigation. I'm hoping that those will be among the other changes that are made, and I think there are other outstanding community concerns about IPR that we can also add when that comes up. So thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. Anyone else? If not, then let's take a roll call on the resolution, please.
Saltzman?
Well, thank you, Mr. Rivera, for your willingness to serve. Aye.
Novick?
Thank you very much. Aye.
Fritz?
This is a huge time commitment and a very significant citizen participation role, so thank you very much, and congratulations to the auditor, and thank you, Irene Conner, for an excellent outreach process to get so many good candidates. Aye.
Fish?
Thank you for stepping up and agreeing to serve. And I was delighted, in fact, that you had experience with 211 Info, which is the local and statewide network that connects people to services and has been so vitally important during this great recession. So thank you and welcome. Aye.
Hales.
Good process, good result. Thank you very much, and we look forward to hearing your clear-eyed view of what we should do to do the right thing. Thank you. Aye. Thanks very much. Congratulations, Roberto. All right, let's move then back to item 779.
Screening of student films from the Media Institute for Social Change Summer Program.
Well, this is an unusual item for the council, I realize, but we have some talented filmmakers here this morning and their sponsor, so welcome.
Morning, Mayor. Morning, council members. I'm Phil Bussey. I'm the director of the Media Institute for Social Change, and each summer we bring out a select group of very smart, very engaged students over 2 months. Broadly, in the context of the resolution you just passed, the students take their social interests and their social passions, and they mature that into professional skills. More specifically, they learn to make documentaries about things that Portland's doing right. 7 years ago when we started the program, then-Mayor Tom Potter requested that the students show the films. We've continued that tradition. It's a fantastic opportunity for them to share, and I also think it's a great opportunity for council members and the mayor to see some of the great things that Portland is doing.
Okay. Yeah, my name is Lacey Dent, and I am a college student at Vassar College in New York, and I'm a part of the summer documentary program. And it's a really great opportunity to be able to come here from a different state and try to enact change through film. And me and the other girls have been working on 3 separate documentaries, and particularly me and my partner found a really inspiring story. We focus on this woman who struggled with homelessness, which seems to be a topical issue in Portland now, and we just created this film. We told her story, and it was just really great to be able to give voice to her through our project, which is why this type of program is really important.
Great. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Laura Holberg, and I'm also a student with the program. I go to Lewis and Clark College right here in Portland. It's great to be working with 7 women from all around the world, from Vassar in New York all the way to someone who came from London, England this year. So we have 3 films to show you.
Great.
So the first one is the film that my partner and I did about the Independent Publishing Resource Center in Southeast Portland. I think it used to be downtown and then recently moved over to the east side. But it focuses on adult creativity and zine culture and resource sharing that exists in Portland. The Tool Library and the Bike Co-op are some other examples of resource sharing like this. So without further ado, I'm going to play that one first.
With slight ado.
I think you might already be queued up for that one. Carla, are you up there? I think you're already queued up. Yeah, there you go.
Just to give a little bit more context while this goes, the students on the wall also share these films with other cities and other decision makers, hopefully forward some of the inspiration and the good things that Portland's doing here. And they've had good success in the past, actually.
Sorry for the delay.
Carla wants the next student project to be rebooting our PA system in this room, which is always a challenge.
Technician in here.
This is always the hardest part of the presentation.
It was working this morning.
Of a Luddite. I don't really like reading things online. Things online are too fleeting. It's like when you finish a really good book and you close it and it just has an energy to it, or you just have a feeling associated with it. And I never have a feeling associated with a screen or a blog. I never think, like, remember the first time I clicked on Gawker? It was so magical. People who are not members can come in and use the space, and we have a computer lab and printers and copy machines, and we have a production room that's full of materials for that are appropriate for making a publication.
The IPRC enables people to make their own books, zines, comics. The idea is sort of like a gym membership for creative people, where for really only $55 a year, you have access to a lot of stuff that A, you probably don't have space for in your house, and you don't have money for.
The way that we are special or unique is that we empower our students to learn all of the tools of publishing. So they learn how to do letterpress, screen printing, bookbinding, how to think about design, and then give them support in their manuscripts to finish. We leave people to their own devices quite a bit, which I think helps in the creative process. Would be to just come to the center and get a tour, and that's a great first step. Take a class, ask the volunteer what a zine is.
If you do a zine and it sucks, it doesn't matter. Just
your computer, print some stuff out, paste it down, take it to a Kinko's, take it to the IPRC, take it somewhere where there's a photocopier, your parents' work, somewhere, make 50 copies of it. Anyone can get rid of 50 copies.
You can't shop drop a blog, is what I like to say a lot. Shop dropping is where you just leave your zine in a magazine rack or leave it on a bus seat for someone to find. You can't do that digitally.
The strangest thing is, so, you know, I was the outreach coordinator at the IPRC for a really long time. So I would give zine-making workshops to little kids, and I found they are on board. They're like, great, yeah, of course. Another way to express myself, great. But the time that I taught it that people were the most freaked out was adults, like middle-aged adults. They came and they were in this writing program, and I came as a guest. And as a guest, I did a zine presentation where I said, okay, here's what we're going to do. You've been doing all this writing. We're just going to publish it. They freaked out. They want to have someone else tell them this is good enough or you're good enough. I like to tell them, you know, if you don't see yourself represented in media and you don't see someone else telling your story, don't wait for someone else to tell your story. Tell it yourself.
I ask groups of teens all the time, raise your hand if you feel totally represented by the mainstream media.
Two other films.
I also wanted to mention really quickly that all the music in the film were local Portland acts who actually contacted directly and gave us permission to use our music in the film. So there's a lot of talent here that we tried to tap into.
Excellent. We see the next?
Yeah. The next film is about a very unique and new tavern in Portland.
Apologies for the delay.
No.
You need to sit the forward.
Public House comes like directly from Portland. It's like an idea birthed out of the identity of our city. I mean, there's nothing more Portland than breweries and pubs, and there's nothing more Portland than nonprofits, you know. So merging those two ideas was really, we thought, really a perfect idea. About 4 years ago or so, some friends of mine and I were sitting in my backyard. We're talking about starting up a nonprofit of some sort, doing something for our city. So we thought, well, what if we came alongside and said, let's start a business that exists solely to fund and source these nonprofits and what they're doing. And so we bounced around a couple ideas of, you know, what kind of business we could start up. And we were having beers, and I was like, what about a pub? Public House is something that was built, created by and for, you know, the community, Portland proper, and our neighborhood, particularly Woodlawn. We did this through about 100 to 200 different volunteers that came in, spent time in the remodeling process, came in and helped donate money, helped donate items, kitchen items, you know, utensils, plates, glassware, all those things were all provided by the community. And now that we're up and running, we still have community members that come in and volunteer regularly, helping serve and helping host and bus tables and things like that.
Long story short, I was out on a run one day. I heard worship music coming from upstairs. I'm like, that's kind of strange. And so, like, I found the sign, kind of got on the website, got wrapped up with Ryan's Church, the Oregon community. And from there on out, they were like, hey, we're starting a pub. And I'm like, wait, church, like, helping start a pub is just amazing. And so from there on out, I was on board completely and totally. Anytime that I can mix anything in with a pub, I'm generally on board.
So I'm pastor of a church called the Oregon Community, and that's actually my job. That's what I actually do for a living. And so that's, for me, that's part of my motivation of why I'm involved in what we're doing here. Is, it's a big part of my understanding of kind of life and the world and the meaning of all things.
Good. Jesus, thank you for our faith community, and thank you for what you're doing in us and through us. I pray that you would just help us to... just to love our city and to love our neighborhood and to love one another today. We choose to worship you through our acts of service this morning. Instead of a more traditional way, we choose to honor you through our care for our neighborhood and for one another. I pray as we go out that you would allow us to connect with one another, to share life, and to open up in some way. And I pray you'd open our eyes to our neighbors and give us opportunities to care for those around us in any way possible. Thank you for the chance to do this together. It's in your name we pray. Amen?
Amen.
Amen. Amen.
You can't lose. It's the same price for a beer, and yet some of the proceeds are going towards something good rather than just towards, you know, the manager or the owner of the place.
And it's family-friendly in this place, too, so the whole family.
And plus, when I come home to my wife, I was going to charity all night. She won't get mad if I'm coming home all drunk.
Cheers to that.
There's nothing more, like, you know, oxymoron than, like, have a pint, change the world, you know. But that's the beauty of the Oregon Public House. It's taking something that seems to be somewhat selfish, perhaps, even, right? Or something that's kind of maybe traditionally been hedonistic, where it's just about kind of whatever. But using that thing to give back and to care for others. And so the idea of the Oregon Public House is that it is supporting organizations that are indeed changing the world through what they do, right? By simply going out and having a pint, having a meal, and hanging out with friends.
It's a remarkable place for us to have this programming. There's just the wealth of successful projects like these. It's also, it's incredible. We have filmmakers that donate their time. Portland Community Media provides us with equipment. This next story is a little bit more poignant. Lacey and her partner Catherine from St. Olaf College did a really fantastic job with it. And it's, do you want to say anything more about it, Lacey?
I'm just really proud to have filmed this and to have worked with a really incredible woman that I met here and got to know in such a short time. And I think my partner, Catherine, feels the same way. She really inspires us personally. So I hope she inspires you as well.
This is all of my writing. That, and then that on the bed, too. And then some new stuff in my phone. I'm a writing junkie. I was actually the first person in my family to go to college. And everybody in my family is really smart. They just never went to college. But the path after that, I basically married the wrong person. the worst thing about being homeless was just feeling powerless. You just felt like you were going to be there forever and there was nothing anybody could do or say that would change your path. As a woman, it's really hard to be on the street. You know, I've seen some women do horrible things just to fend off male attackers. I mean, they don't shower and things like that, and it's just horrible. Like, we really need to protect our women on the streets. I always felt like, I mean, since third grade, very blessed to just have the talent and gift of poetry. And to have a mom and dad that kind of fostered my talent from a very young age, and I always felt like poetry definitely conquered everything, and it was my rock through many storms in my life. When I first got diagnosed with the multiple sclerosis symptoms, I was in the women's shelter. I was getting this backache that never went away, and I was getting these stabbing pains up and down my legs. It's very painful. There's times where I'll take a 2-hour nap, and I will wake up on my bed, and I literally cannot get up, and I will slide out of bed, and I will crawl to get my cane, and it's very painful, and nobody sees that but me. Gives me partial paralysis, so it's like, think about waking up and just not being able to move.
Her infirmities make it hard for her to get by sometimes, but I think she does a pretty good job with that, and especially with, I don't know, for the kind of disease she has, she really rises to the occasion, I guess. But she's got a really big heart, and she's a really nice girl. She's also a very good poet, too.
I've just learned, again, to take joy in the little things. And I've learned that you can really count on people during hard times. And I've also learned that very important to surround yourself with positivity. Finding a job when you're homeless is almost near impossible. I did it. So, I mean, homeless people, most of them are not lazy. Sometimes I didn't have any storage room for my things, so I was interviewing for a preschool job at Vermont Family Hills Learning, and I had to stash my big suitcase behind a garbage can and just hope no one took it. It's, you know, you go in with dirty hair and it was just horrible. It's almost near impossible to find a job when you're homeless.
I would not believe that anybody could be that cheerful, you know, and I had to meet her to realize that she's genuinely a happy person. And shares that. I know she has her pain, but she overcomes that and shares her happiness.
You know, the sad part is I go downtown and I see some of the same women and they're still homeless and I'm not. So I kind of have like homeless survivor's guilt. It's really weird. I mean, I can sit here and say the most average of people, you can, and talented people too, you can find right on the street. Blue butterfly crush with unmovable arms, she tries to fly above. She is always stuck on the ground. She wants to be invisible. She is too powerful, too vulnerable, too beautiful to remain invisible. She clenches her jaw and stares at the world with both eyes open, a blue gaze that could tear your heart apart in mere minutes. She is composed of beauty and light and proves this daily. She is a woman. She may not have a home, but she has a name. She has a purpose. She has dreams, and you want to get to know her because she is the best thing that will ever happen to you.
Well done. Well done, all of them. Really excellent, Phil. Thank you for being the guide for this great program. How long have you been involved in this now, Phil?
Oh, we've been doing this 7 summers now.
Yeah, so you've been there the whole time?
Yeah, yeah, so we've had 100 students come through, and 70% say they go into public interest, which is great.
That's great.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the opportunity to share the stories.
Well, thanks for putting these before the community today. I know there's some of us that would probably like to help publicize this work further. So if it's possible for us to post these films on websites and such, some of us, I bet, would be interested in doing that.
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah. Did you find Brendan? Good. Let our office know if you can. We'd like to do that.
We will. Thanks, Great. Michael.
Thank you, and good luck.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. Let's hear it for our students. All right, let's move on to the remaining couple of regular agenda items that we have today, Carla. Okay.
Item 795, delegate authority to the Chief of Police to execute and amend agreements in support of law enforcement training.
Chief Krebs is here. Come on up. Explain this item for us.
Good morning, Mayor and City Commissioners. I'm Mike Krebs. I am the Assistant Chief of the Portland Police Bureau, assigned to the Services Branch. I'm here today to talk about this ordinance and what it is that gives the Chief the authority to enter into agreements with private and public entities to use their property for training. Some examples might be where there's a gentleman that has, he's like a property developer. He may find a property that is dilapidated and he plans on destroying it. He will then allow us to come train on that property for a week or so with our SWAT team. Or there may be like a school district asking us to come in and do some training inside of their school in case there's a problem in the future. So these properties are given to us free of cost, but we only might be able to use them maybe for 1 day or 2 weeks. And this allows the chief to, someone calls up and says, hey, I got this property for 2 weeks. The chief can then enter into an agreement with the city attorney's approval, and we can go out there and train. It holds the property owner harmless if something happens to our officers. So I think it's good for the city. It shortens the process. And one part of the ordinance is if the property costs any money at all, he has to go through the regular process. So this places no burden financially on the city.
And we have to do this by ordinance because we have to formally delegate the authority to make
correct
kind of
delegate it to the chief, and then he's allowed to sign it. Rather than having to come through city council and all the other process, he can just execute these really quickly because sometimes they're only here for us for a couple of weeks, and they're also very they don't cost the city a dime. So,
okay. Questions?
So I don't recall any or many of these coming to council in the past 4 years. Do you know how many have been before council?
You know, I don't know that for sure. I don't have that answer. I talk with our SWAT team today, and we do about 6 to 10 of these a year. So I don't know if there's been some confusion there or not, but they have not been coming here. Is that what you're?
Yes, I don't recall.
Okay.
Dived into something like this before. So then I'm wondering why we're now saying, yes, you can do this.
Yeah, I don't have that answer. Someone must have found a situation where this is required to be done. And maybe I'm not sure. I don't have the answer for that. I can get that and get back with you folks if you like.
This isn't an emergency item, so we can get back to you on that.
Okay, so the question is, how many of these have come before the city council?
In the last 4 years.
Okay, I can do that.
Thank you.
Good. Thanks. Other questions for A.C. Krebs? All right, thank you.
Okay,
appreciate
thank you.
It. Is there anyone signed up to testify on this item?
Yes, we have three people. Please come on up. Mark Hoffens, I believe his last name, Joe Walsh, and Dan Handelman.
Come on up. Good morning.
Due to hearing his testimony, I Mark Hoffens, wanted to stand on that.
Okay.
That was beautiful.
Thanks.
Yep. I'll address you guys as well another time.
Appreciate okay. You. Thank you. Good morning, Dan. Hello again, Mayor and City Council. I'm still Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch. And I appreciate that this ordinance restricts the delegation of authority to the chief to only things that won't cost the city money. But I think Commissioner Fritz started leaning towards what I'm concerned about, which is that maybe there should be some kind of reporting system set up so that we know what's going on, so there's some form of accountability. I'm sure it would not look good for the city if we turned out that, I mean, I'm not accusing the chief of doing this, but if it turned out that a white supremacist militia, say, donated their property or their weapons to the police for training, that wouldn't end up looking very good for the city. So that's like a worst case scenario. But I'm just saying, you want to make sure you don't want to have union busting corporations donating their facilities to the police. That would cause some concern among members of the community. So it'd be great if there were some at least quarterly reporting or something, so that even if council doesn't have to pass every single one of these agreements, that there's a form of reporting back, and you can look over the shoulder and then make corrections if something's askew, as it were. This kind of reminds me of when we had the discussion about the camera placement on businesses, where there's some businesses that were offering to the police, you can put your cameras up on our property pointing outwards. And there was going to be a delegation of authority for the chief to set those up. But I believe that there was some kind of a mechanism put in place so that at least the city would be kept abreast of where those cameras are going to go. And I think we were hoping for the public to be able to find that out too, but I don't remember what ended up happening with that. So, you know, just accountability is part of our mission, and I just want to bear in mind, anytime you delegate the authority to an unelected official, it'd be great that their community has some way to make sure that that's being done responsibly. Okay, point taken. Thank you. Joe, good morning.
Good morning. My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. We had the same question that Commissioner Fritz had, which doesn't surprise me. Anytime you take an elected official's authority and you give it to the police department, it makes us very nervous. I don't think the police department has risen to the level that we should start moving our responsibilities into the police department and let them handle it. Now, when we read this, we had the same reaction as Commissioner Fritz had. This seems so simple that you would have training on private property, and why would you have to go before the council to do that? But then the argument was made, look, if it's only 6 or 8 times a year, then what is the problem of having the mayor have oversight? And we like that idea. No matter who the mayor is, we like that idea, that concept. So when we start moving the responsibilities from our elected officials to the police department on almost any level, we get very, very nervous with that. And it could be abused, and I think Dan is right. There's a lot of stuff to think about on this. It sounds simple on the surface, but it could get complicated, and there's enough going on right now with the police department and this council. You don't need this stuff. Just leave it the way it is, and it's only 6 or 8 times a year, and I don't think the mayor is that busy where the chief of police can't pick up the phone and say, can we do this? So I don't think they should have to come before the council and get authorization, but the mayor should have the oversight. Thank you.
Well, obviously this is going to come back on second reading in 3 weeks when we have the next council meeting. In the meantime, we get answers to that question. Also, the question of what should the commissioner in charge be doing? I mean, we all sign off on a number of things ministerially. For example, every single discipline case requires the commissioner in charge's signature, and that's true in the police bureau as well. In the police bureau's case, when we're using forfeiture funds to purchase something, I sign off on that individually. So let's take another look at those questions as well as the question that Commissioner Fritz raised in the meantime between now and when this comes back to council. So thank you for your testimony. Good. Thank you, Mike. Okay, so this is carried over to second reading. Item number 796.
Accept guaranteed maximum price of $6,010,828 from Scansa USA Building, Inc. for the construction of the Portland Fire and Rescue Station 21 project.
Good morning, Ms. Moody, Chief.
Good morning.
Commissioner, please.
Thank you, Mayor. It's a pleasure to have the Chief Procurement Officer's report to Council on Station 21, as it's been a long time in the making. Station 21 is on the eastern shore of the Willamette River, right across the Hawthorne Bridge, and it's Portland's last remaining firehouse that is not seismically upgraded in order to withstand a major earthquake. Obviously, this is not acceptable, and increased efforts around marine rescue and the aquatic resources in the Fire Bureau means Station 21 must become a safe and effective station to run both on land and on water. Before us is the guaranteed maximum price that Skanska USA will charge the city for the demolition of the old structure, site stabilization, and construction of the new station. I believe that all due diligence has been pursued and that this is the best price for this vital piece of infrastructure. OMF's facility services, Portland Fire and Rescue, purchasing, and our private architects and engineering consultants have pored over these plans time and time again, looking for any savings and efficiencies they could find. And while this guaranteed maximum price is substantially larger than the low confidence estimate at the start of this project, it remains within the budgeted resources identified for this effort. Chief Procurement Officer Christine Moody, Project Manager Connie Johnson, and Portland Fire and Rescue Chief Aaron Jansons are here to maybe make some brief remarks and, more importantly, to answer any questions council members may have.
Great. Good morning.
Thank you, Commissioner. Christine Moody, Procurement Services. In April of 2012, City Council authorized the use of a construction manager general contractor process for the construction of the Portland Fire and Rescue Fire Station 21 project. Through this process, an RFP was issued and four responses were received. The responses were evaluated by a five-person selection committee, which included representatives from Portland Fire and Facility Services, Water Bureau, and the Minority Evaluator Program. Skanska USA was the highest scoring proposal and was issued a notice of intent to award a contract. The city then entered into contract negotiations, and now you have before you the procurement report recommending a contract award for a guaranteed maximum price of $6,010,828. The city and Skanska jointly worked on a minority women and emerging small business and supplier construction plan in which Skanska has committed to achieve the aspirational goal of 35% MWESB subcontracting or equal to $1,340,000. Skanska will comply with the city's workforce training and hiring program requirements of 20% apprentices, 18% minority, and 9% female work hours on the project. I will turn this over to Fire Chief Jansons to discuss the importance of moving forward with this project. And as the Commissioner stated, Connie Johnson is here from Facility Services to answer any technical questions you might have.
Great, thank you.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. Aaron Jansons, Portland Fire and Rescue. Just a little history on Station 21. The original station at the east end of the Hawthorne Bridge was built in 1960 and operated until 1991. The 2009 tragedy of two children being thrown from the Selwood Bridge, along with our increasing demands for river response on the Willamette River, prompted council to support reopening the station. So in January 2010, Portland Fire and Rescue relocated personnel from Station 23, from the station at 13th and Gideon, Southeast Portland, to what we now know as Station 21 along the Hawthorne Bridge. And those personnel then cross-staff both a fire engine and a rescue craft, soon to be a fire boat, to provide both land and marine response. And I'd like to thank Council for supporting the strategic move. From Station 21, firefighters respond to over 2,300 emergency calls. Approximately 10% of those calls are marine-based, and they save approximately one person a month every month from a near-drowning incident. During construction, Station 21 will continue to operate from this site from temporary quarters directly adjacent to the station, and we expect from the beginning of demolition to occupancy of the finished station to be approximately 14 months. As you know, this is the final fire and rescue station to be seismically upgraded, and a team of people have done their best to thoroughly review and contain costs. I'd like to take about 30 seconds to thank now retired Division Chief Glenn Eisner, Deputy Chief Marco Benetti, who's here and has taken over that project for him, our partners at BDS, Christine Moody, and special thanks to Connie Johnson, who has really done a phenomenal job overseeing the project and managing costs. It's been a real chore. I'd also like to thank and give credit to Welton Architecture for what I think is going to be a beautiful station that enhances our downtown core and a very practical and efficient station that has the ability to add an RRV in the future if demands increase in the future. And also, given its proximity to downtown from the Hawthorne Bridge and Esplanade, it has an educational display area within the station along the Esplanade and a meeting room to share with both community and city partners, which I think is key for the future of the stations. So I believe this is going to be a solid long-term investment in the safety of our community.
Anything, Connie?
Good morning, Connie Johnson, Project Manager of Facility Services. I'll anticipate that you're interested in some of the green strategies. We're on track for LEED Gold certification. We'll have a solar array on the roof that will generate almost 10 kilowatts of energy. We're using certified wood, recycled content materials, and we are instituting a measurement and verification effort to actually measure post-occupancy, what kind of energy we're getting, and making sure that we're on track with what was designed into the project. We'll also have a stormwater planter that runs between the fire station and the Esplanade going north and south. So just briefly on the construction schedule, Skanska plans to mobilize and reroute the Esplanade traffic the 26th of August. About 2 weeks after that, they'll begin demolition. And then another 2 weeks after that, they'll begin the structural piles in the ground for the station and the soil stabilization effort, and that's going to last about 3 months. So you probably won't see anything come out of the ground, you know, significantly the station until January of 2014. And then we expect substantial completion October of 2014, and the emergency responders can move back in.
Questions for the team? Thank you all. Thanks, Commissioner.
Move adoption of the procurement report.
Second.
Anyone want to testify on this item? I don't
think we have. Yes, we have one person signed up.
We do have someone signed up. Okay.
Lightning.
Thank you. Good morning.
My name is Lightning. First of all, I have a problem with that seismic upgrade. It's my understanding that's a single-level building, and that is not required to be seismically upgraded, unless, of course, you do major renovations and or demolish the property. So, again, to do that seismic upgrade, there is a cost involved in that, nowhere close to $6 million. Again, Fire Station 21, located at 5 Southeast Madison, overlooking the Willamette River, should not be demolished. Fire Station 21 is an historic waterfront property, in my opinion. Someday could be turned into a fire department maritime museum. Fire Station 21 has a vast city of Portland history dating many years back and is still currently being used as a fire station. If there was a building in this city of Portland to be preserved for its historic significance, this definitely would be a prime candidate. An example to follow would be the efforts being made by Jordan Snitzer to preserve Centennial Mills property. Centennial Mills also has a long-standing history within Portland, and Mr. Snitzer is making every attempt to preserve this historic property and not have it demolished. Fire Station 21 should go through the same rigorous process like Centennial Mills, with public input to determine if it should be demolished or preserved. I would like to think that the same attempts have been made to preserve Fire Station 21. I ask, can Fire Station 21 be preserved? Can it continue to be operated like it has been previously for many years? This is not about the construction project amount of $6 million being proposed. This is about an historic building being preserved because of its historic significance to the city of Portland. Save Fire Station 21. Do not allow it to be demolished. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Anyone else? Okay, then we have a motion to accept the report. Further council discussion? Roll call.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
I know in the past you've had questions about this, Commissioner Saltzman, so I appreciate knowing that you have delved into all of those in thorough detail ahead of time, and also to the chief and others for coming to brief me beforehand. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, 797.
Amend intergovernmental agreement with Oregon Department of Transportation to provide for technical adjustments to the name of the project and completion timeline for right-of-way phase for the Southeast 122nd Avenue Complete and Green Main Street project.
Mr. Mayor, colleagues, I actually apologize. This is one of a couple of items today that probably could have gone on the consent agenda. We're still working through at PBOT how we're going to separate out the consent agenda items or the regular agenda items, and we should hopefully have a more rational process for that soon. This item relates to PBOT receiving a grant from having received a grant from ODOT to purchase the right-of-way for a continuous sidewalk corridor at Southeast 122nd from Holgate to Ramona. The purchase of the right-of-way will allow for a separated sidewalk with a planter strip in most parts of Southeast 122nd where the sidewalks are missing. The funding also supports two crossings and bringing curb ramps up to ADA standards. High rates of foreclosure activity during the recent periods of economic difficulty resulted in a longer right-of-way phase, which is because when a house is in foreclosure, the city needed to work with large banks to procure the right-of-way needed for the project, and this affected the timeline significantly in the case of four houses involved. So this ordinance makes a technical adjustment extending the right-of-way phase to September 30th, 2013.
Okay. Thanks for that explanation. Anyone signed up?
No one signed up.
If not, then roll call on the emergency ordinance.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
This and the next item may be technical in nature, but it's nice to see these sidewalk projects getting done. Aye. Okay, 798.
Accept a grant from State Routes to School Program for $498,000 and authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Oregon Department of Transportation for design, engineering, and construction of bicycle and pedestrian safety improvements at four Portland elementary schools.
This item isn't very controversial either. However, I don't want ever to have a Safe Routes to School project on the consent agenda because I think we should miss no opportunity to brag about Safe Routes to School, which, as you know, is our extremely successful program, which has resulted in Portland having about 40% of students in the many schools that participate in Safe Routes to Schools walking or biking to school compared to a national average of about 12%. And here we are accepting a grant of nearly $500,000 will allow us to invest in critical safety improvements for pedestrians at four elementary schools, Harvey Scott, Lent K-8, Prescott Elementary, and Mill Park Elementary. And we have Gabe Graff here to give us a few more details.
Great.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners.
Well, Carl whispers incantations over our system.
Well, my name is Gabe Graff, and I'm the Safety and Operations Manager in the Bureau of Transportation in our Active Transportation Division. And I'm here at Commissioner Novick's request to give you a very brief overview of our Safe Routes to School program in light of this grant in front of you today. The Portland Safe Routes to School program is a partnership between the Bureau of Transportation, police, school districts, neighborhoods, community organizations, and agencies that implement programs and projects that make walking, biking, and rolling to school easier, safer, and more accessible to more Portland families. We started the program in 2005 with 8 partner schools. We now serve 35,000 students at over 80 schools across 5 school districts. We have partnerships with almost every elementary school in the city. We provide bicycle safety education and pedestrian safety education, encourage walking school buses and bike trains, partner with police on enforcement and safety issues, and identify projects around schools with the community that improve safety for young walkers and bikers. We have consistently evaluated our progress since the program began and have grown walking and biking rates, as Commissioner Novick mentioned, to elementary schools by 35%. Today, 42% of trips to Portland elementary schools are active ones, a significantly higher rate than the national average of 12%. Equitable service is core to this program, and we developed a policy in 2012 to guide our work in this regard. The policy helps us steer limited resources to the schools and students most in need. This is the tool we use to identify the 4 schools shown here, which will be receiving these much-needed grant funds to build pedestrian crossing improvements. Thanks for the opportunity to share the program with you today, and happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Good work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone signed up?
No one else signed up.
Then a roll call, please.
Saltzman.
Well, this is indeed really great and important work, so thank you for giving us this brief overview.
Aye.
Novick?
I neglected to mention where these schools are. Harvey Scott K-8 it's located at 67th and Prescott. Lent K-8 is at 97th and Holgate. Prescott Elementary is part of the Park Rose District, located at Northeast 104th and Prescott, and Mill Park Elementary is in the David Douglas District, and it's at 117th and Lincoln. So I'm particularly pleased that schools in these areas are getting this kind of support. Aye.
Fritz.
It is indeed good to see that Cully and East Portland are starting to get their long-needed pedestrian improvements. Thank you, Commissioner Novick. Aye.
Fish.
Steve, I think I finally figured out why you put these on the regular agenda. And I've sort of done the rough sketch of the math, and I think if you add up the federal funds and the grant money, you are likely to come in first place this week in the grant and federal fund sweepstakes, putting all the other bureaus to shame. So may I say that on behalf of the Water Bureau and the Bureau of Environmental Services, we accept the challenge.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Aye.
Hales.
That'll be fun to watch. Aye. Next item.
799. Accept a grant in the amount of $1,360,000 from the Oregon Department of Transportation and authorize an intergovernmental agreement for the North Williams Traffic Safety and Operations Project.
Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, as you know, in 2011, the Portland Bureau of Transportation began to develop a plan for improving bicycle and pedestrian facilities along North Williams Avenue. In June 2012, the Stakeholders Advisory Committee for the project voted to support the project recommendations, which exceeded the original project budget. Really appreciate all of the work of the stakeholders. Recommendations included changes to the striping of the roadway to improve bicycle capacity and safety, pedestrian crossing safety improvements, and traffic management improvements. PBOT has pursued funding for design and construction of the project through several grant programs, including the Oregon Department of Transportation's Transportation Enhancement Program. And in March 2013, ODOT's Transportation Enhancement Program notified PBOT that it will award $1,360,000 in grant funds. And so that's how this comes to us here today.
Okay, we have staff here to answer questions if there are any, or presentation if you have one. Okay, any questions? Great stuff. Anyone signed up to testify?
No one signed up.
All right, then let's take a roll call on that one as well.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz.
This is great that we got the grant and also that we were able to come to some consensus in the community on this. The grant itself doesn't tell the story of the concern and community investment in having the discussions on exactly what to do with it. And so I also want to note that the late Lee Perlman was very involved in this on behalf of the Elliott neighborhood, and that I recognize his service to our community. Thank you, Commissioner Novick, for putting this on the regular agenda, because it is important for people to know that when they've had difficult discussions in the community, Judith Mary and Dora Perry and others